The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it to the start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to our first Sunday show in the month of February 2020. We're glad to have you on board, and we're kicking off the month with a fabulous set of guests who I will quickly introduce in just a minute. But first, a couple of very, very short announcements. We're on the 60-minute format today, so if you want to get a comment or question in for our two guests, Dr. Gil Levin, Barry DiGregorio, about Mars Viking, the experiment that wasn't an experiment, unfortunately, that Barry is going to tell us about, or anything in between, watch your clock. Make sure you do it while we are on the air. The website newsletter will be posted right after this program, and it'll show you all of what's planned for the coming week. And we have a full regular Space Show week scheduled. And to save time, I'm going to skip most of all the other announcements, other than to remind everybody we're listener-funded, and we are a nonprofit 501c3, and we certainly need your help and financial support. There's a big PayPal link at the top of our page, and that is the best way to contribute to us. Remember, as a nonprofit, you get tax deductions both in California as well as on the federal government side. If you don't use electronics for making your contributions, you can certainly send a check by mail to One Giant Leap Foundation, and instructions are on our website for that, where you can email me about that if you want. One more quick announcement about today. This is a unique day on the calendar, everybody, and I posted about it on the Space Show blog for this show. So it doesn't really have a lot to do with our program, but it is unique. So real quickly, it's Groundhog's Day. And next, it is Super Bowl Day. And next, it is a very, very rare, extra special palindrome day that is so rare it hasn't happened in centuries, and this is the only time it's going to happen this century. And if you convert the time on the West Coast to universal time or 24-hour time, it's even more rare. So I posted the Washington Post article that explains this in some detail on the blog. You can read about it. And I just wanted you all to know that Gil and Barry are with us on a very, very action-packed and a very special day on the calendar, and we can now add them to the specialness of this date. So you can call us on the Space Show, 1-866-687-7223. You can email us at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And, of course, you can use our blog, which is thespaceshow.com, all the way to the far right to the upcoming show menu, and click on the first program. That is our program with Gil and Barry. And then just scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you can post a comment or ask a question. As soon as you hit send, I will get it, and I can introduce it on the air. Everybody knows who Gil and Barry are. They're frequent guests on the Space Show. Their full bios are already on the website. So I'll to save talk time, I'll just let you read about them. And welcome, Barry and Gil, back to the show. And also to very quickly thank our sponsors. And those sponsors include Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, ASTROC, AIAA, Celestis, the National Space Society, and the Space Plan. Gil and Barry, great to talk to you again. A great way to kick off a very rare day on the calendar, and I'm glad you're both with us. So hope everything is going great for you both on a beginning of a 2020 year. And Barry, starting with you, there was an experiment for detecting life on Mars that the UK endorsed, and you guys even had funding for this mission. And this was around 2015, 2016. It looked like a go, and then it disappeared. What happened? Why are we not seeing this experiment go forward?
Well, it's a long story, as most of these things go. But the origin begins with the landing of Curiosity in Gale Crater, of course, in 2012. Its primary mission was scheduled for 2 years. And in 2014, NASA made a special announcement that for the extended mission, which started in 2014, they would accept proposals to the Mars Science Laboratory Participating Scientists Program. Okay, and well, one of the things that I thought of right away was, you know, maybe we could use our Curiosity, even though it wasn't designed to look for life at all. I mean, it has some really nice cameras on it. And it has the ability to detect manganese, and it has the ability to sniff out methane. So I thought we would put together a proposal and try to use the Curiosity in an improvised way to look for some sort of, signs of life. And one of the first things I thought of was Gil's, previous suggestions that there could be photosynthetic organisms on Mars. I mean, he mentioned this during the Viking mission, you know, looking at some of the rocks, and he thought he saw colors indicative of lichens. And so I thought, well, there were two NASA scientists aboard the Mars Pathfinder lander that actually conducted a search for photosynthetic organisms. And although it didn't get a lot of press, they actually said that they might have detected some photosynthetic pigments at the Mars Pathfinder landing site. So, you know, I asked Gil if he'd be interested in putting together a proposal with me and some other scientists as well, and everybody seemed to agree that this would be a good idea, taking a rover designed not to look for life and use it to look for life.
So what happened?
Well, as these things go, there's lots of papers in between. There's a lot of paperwork, and the first step was to get the idea on paper and send it to the UK Space Agency, which we did.
Now, why the UK Space Agency?
Well, Gil and I were both, affiliated with the Buckingham Center for Astrobiology.
Okay.
Okay, and you had to be affiliated with a university to do this. I mean, you can't just be some guy walking down the street and do this. Yeah, you have to have some kind of credentials or background with this kind of work.
Okay.
So anyways, I put together an initial team that I had to jostle around a little bit, you know, but eventually we got that straightened out. And the proposal that I sent was to the space exploration manager out at the UK Space Agency, and she sent me back on April 28th, 2015. She said, subject to final budget allocations and scientific technical cost reviews to be conducted by the UK Space Agency, the UK Space Agency would be willing to endorse Barry DiGregorio as a participating scientist in the above proposal to the NASA, AO, and a bunch of numbers after that, okay, which is basically the NASA announcement of opportunity for participating scientists on the extended mission for Curiosity.
Okay, so they're going to endorse you. Did it pass their budget review and all of that?
Well, like I said, papers have to fly before any of this goes. So what they did was they sent their official letter of endorsement to Dr. Michael Meyer, the Mars Exploration Program lead scientist.
Uh-huh.
He's at NASA HQ. So they had to review it with him first. And then, you know, the process gets going. And let's see, on May 14th, I received a letter from Dr. Meyer, and he said that, what did he say? He said so many things. Anyways, he told me to proceed with a step two proposal. The step one proposal was if somebody endorsed it.
Okay.
So we had the UK Space Agency endorse it, and they thought it was a really good idea. And then you had to write up a very detailed report, 15 pages. That's called the Step 2 Proposal. And that's when I got our co-investigators, which Gil was one, and I was told by NASA they had to be unpaid co-investigators, but they also said that they discouraged co-investigators. Like in this letter from Mike Meyer, for example, it says, although co-investigators are discouraged, it seems many proposals have a co-investigator, if not many co-investigators. You are therefore encouraged to drop co-investigators and do not need to inform NASA. It says, you also may not change the title or make major changes to the proposal scope from what you submitted in step one. So that's from Michael Meyer. And he told us to go ahead. And so, you know, all of us wrote something for the proposal. You know, Gil, Ron Dorn, who is a professor of geography at Arizona State University. Giorgio Biancardi, he's a researcher and adjunct professor at the Medical Biotechnologies at Siena University in Italy. We had Dr. Robert Lauder, professor of pharmaceutical sciences at the University of Kentucky. And we called the proposal a search for extant Indolithic and Hypolithic microbial communities that had what would be exposed by broken and overturned rocks by the MSL rover wheels using MOLLE. So that was the complete. Do you want me to read that again? I was reading two different papers here.
Can I post some of what you sent me on the blog?
Yeah, sure.
Any restrictions not of what not to post? Like, can I put Michael Meyer's letter up there?
Well, you know, the only trouble is, what if I want to write a book about this sometime? It seems like it'd be a pretty good book.
Could put the proposal up there. Okay, the proposal is about 30 pages, right?
No, not the proposal.
I'm looking at the thing that starts off with table of contents.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that is. Did you read over the proposal?
I went over it. So that's, as I said, about 30 pages, if I'm not mistaken, because I printed it out.
Yeah, it could be about that. But no, I don't want that posted.
Okay, and not.
We can talk about it much as you like.
Okay.
You can put the UK Space Agency document up there.
Okay.
And I suppose you could. I know your readers demand.
Well, if you're going to put it in a book, you want to keep it preserved for your book. Do you have this on a website that I can just link to?
You know what? There is a official University of Buckingham It is a press release, and I thought I sent it to you.
Yeah, I have that. I have the press release. You want me to just put the press release up there?
Yeah, that kind of says everything right
okay,
there.
I'll just post the URL for the press release.
Okay.
Okay, so you're all set to go. And,
yeah.
And then what happens? And you got funding. People said they'd fund it, right?
Well, yeah. After review of NASA, though, you know, what the UK was saying was that as long as NASA is going to approve it, which they did for a phase two. I mean, if they didn't like it, they would have let us know. Let's see. I have the proposal in my hand. Okay, it says, this is from Michael Meyer. It says, your proposal, one of 106 step one proposals received by them this year, was found to be within the broad scope of the Mars, you know, space exploration program. So in other words, they were saying to us that, okay, you want to try to use Curiosity to look for photosynthetic pigments, you want to use Curiosity to look for rock varnish features, you want to use Curiosity to see if the methane that had been emanating from the landing site, they couldn't tell exactly where it was. I suggested it might be coming from some of the rocks there that had been, you know, broken open. And we know here on Earth that methanogenic organisms sequestered in, like, playa deposits will release methane. So, you know, we had a proposal.
Okay.
Gil, you have anything out there that you're going to add to this?
No, I think, long and short is it was approved by the UK, who offered to fund it. NASA turned it down for very specious reasons that in the letter that Mike Meyer wrote are just plain ridiculous.
Why did they eventually turn it down after they had approved it through these earlier steps?
Yeah, I was going to actually read that to you.
Not wish to acknowledge life on Mars.
Yeah.
Barry, read it to us, okay?
Yeah, okay. Well, here's the summary of our research objectives. We had three major goals. Number one was to determine if extant endolithic and hypolithic microbial communities existed within sulfate gypsum that was on much of, you know, much of the mud rock on Mars is made of, and other rocks accessible on the journey to Mount Sharp. Number two was to determine if any methane gas was emanating from freshly broken or overturned rocks that show colorations or textures suggestive of endolithic or hypolithic communities, as well as measure any methane emanating from any natural small holes that have been observed by MSL's mass cam in approaching the soil. And lastly, determine if any rock coatings on these freshly broken rocks show additional evidence of biotic enhancements, such as are found in terrestrial manganese-rich rock varnishes. And, of course, they gave us their summary of the evaluation and why they didn't pick it.
Which, okay, so tell us why they turned you down finally.
Okay. Now, I'm sure Gil's going to have something to say about this. The proposal did not present plausible arguments for the possible existence of extant photosynthetic communities under current conditions at the landing site. The proposal did not convincingly demonstrate that pigments, if present, could be confidently detected given the limited resolution of the mass cam instrument. Most of the proposed activities are already a part of the routine tasks being performed by members of the instrument teams, and the proposal did not adequately describe what new measurements or analyses would be provided during the proposed project. The proposed The proposal did not demonstrate that the PI, me, has relevant experience in analysis of the types of data to be obtained by the MSL rover or management of scientific projects. The proposal did not describe what unique set of skills or perspectives the PI would expect to contribute to future rover operations. Lastly, they said the budget that I suggested was reasonable.
So why did they approve you and say you don't even need a co-investigator? I don't understand how you got this far, and then they criticize every single component of what you're proposing.
Well, if you want me to theorize.
Yeah, that's all you can do, right?
Yeah, basically. I think it was my selection of Gil on the team.
I was going to ask you if Gil factored into that and they're pissed off that he's on the team and don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right. Like all this talk in here about I do not, have the experience in the analysis types of data to be obtained by the MSL rover or in the management of scientific projects. Well, you know, Gil was...
He was a PI of his
a Viking,
experiment.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, he's on my team, you know, and he along with the other guys.
But they told you in a letter that you didn't need any co-investigators, and in fact, they frown on them, but if you want to use them, you can use them. So it sounds to me like they would have approved you on your own if you didn't have Gil as a co-investigator.
Well, you know, I can't say that for sure, you know, but, I mean, you can take a guess at it, given what they have, you know, done with Gil's work since Viking. You know, I just think that NASA has basically ignored the issue of life on Mars. You know,
Gil, you're just a damn troublemaker.
Yes, I am.
I don't think
Rebel
they
Rouser.
Ignored the issue at all. They keep saying it doesn't exist, and that's far from ignoring it. And I doubt they would have funded it even without me, because it was going to produce additional evidence for life, and they did not want that.
So you think the issue is they're not ready to talk about life on Mars more than the issue is you yourself?
I am absolutely convinced they know there's life on Mars. Any scientist who objectively reviews the data has to conclude that. So you have to then say, well, what the heck's the reason they don't want the public to know that? And the only reason I've ever been able to think of is that it would interfere and delay the Man to Mars mission, which is their great big thing.
Well, it's also the Mars sample return issue as well. I think there's a lot of politics there. And, you know, one of the things I've always thought about since your experience, Gil, with Viking was that, you know, maybe they've never sent a life detection experiment back to Mars because of job security. I know it sounds strange, but look what happened to Apollo. After the first couple of missions landed on the moon, the public lost interest. And I think that, you know, if they said, hey, you know, there's life on Mars, you know, what do we need to go back there for? Why risk it all and spend billions of dollars? I don't know. It's a valid.
Well, you know, I've had lots of NASA Mars guests on the space show, and listeners as well as myself have asked why you won't run life detection experiments. So no matter who we have on, the answer always is something like it's very hard to create a true life detection experiment. It's very costly. They use up a lot of resources on the spacecraft, and nothing else could really get done, and our ability to do it is not there yet. So we come as close as we can without wasting resources and things like that, but we have a ways to go before we can really do that kind of experimentation. So that's kind of what you hear from them, no matter who is asking the question or who is answering the question. It seems to be the party line answer.
An irrefutable experiment was conceived and executed by Louis Pasteur in 1864 when he developed his hay infusion method for detecting microorganisms and proved the existence of microorganisms. And it's that very experiment that we implemented in some modern trappings to go to Mars. And indeed, it's that very experiment that is used by public health departments around the world, supporting billions of people to test their drinking water every day. But, you know, we've been talking in highfalutin scientific terms. Since we last talked, Dave, however, my co-experimenter, Pat Stratt, has published a book, To Mars with Love, and she produces the experiment and explains it in lay terms, so simple and plain that, you know, any 10th grader could comprehend it, and following it would have to conclude, as she did, yeah, we detected microorganisms living on Mars. She includes a number of very funny things that happened to her working on this project for 10 years, including a long time she spent living out at JPL helping the engineers convert our science experiment into a working instrument. So if you read that book, it's simple, enjoyable, funny, but lays out all the details and leads you to the conclusion. But I don't think anybody at NASA wants to read it.
You have a, by the way, listeners, Pat and Gil did a show together when Pat's book came out last year. That program is archived, so I would urge all of you to listen to it as well as to order Pat's book if you have not already done it. It's well worth it. Louise has a question for you. She is in Salt Lake City, and Louise says, I still don't think you have a good reason why NASA would hold back discovery of microbes on Mars. Also, in order to pull that kind of thing off, they would need cooperation from so many different people, not just in the United States and parts of different organizations, but with other space agencies that had knowledge of Mars science as well. How could they pull off that kind of a cover-up? It just doesn't seem plausible.
Well, I think that is a very good rationale. I've thought of that myself. The only problem is I can think of no other reason. But I think she is right. It would be very difficult for a government organization to keep that thing secret so long.
You can simply just not include life detection experiments on spacecraft, like has been done for over 40 years.
Well, they flirt with it, but they don't come up with anything conclusive, obviously, right?
Yeah. Now, if you listen to this summary of evaluation that they gave me, why they didn't let our project go through, just listen to this sentence here. The proposal did not present plausible arguments for the possible existence of extant photosynthetic communities under the conditions at the landing site. And yet, Carol Stoker, a longtime astrobiologist with NASA out at the NASA Ames Research Center.
We know who she is, yeah.
Okay, well then, what did you call her experiment looking for photosynthetic experiment or pigments at the landing site there with the Pathfinder lander? I mean, she actually found a couple of spots on the soil that seemed to show photosynthetic activity.
And how did they treat that?
Well, when I talked to her about it during the Pathfinder lander, she had told me at that time that she was going to release a paper about it, and that never happened. All the best it could do was it made it into the abstracts from the second Astrobiology Science Conference, but it is in there. So, I mean, that to me disqualifies that sentence that the summary of our evaluation, the proposal did not present plausible arguments for the possible existence of extant photosynthetic communities under the conditions of the landing site. And she was actually the inspiration for that type of an experiment. You know, she never got to do a full paper about it, so I thought if we had a chance to do that experiment ourselves using the same filters, you know, which the Mars Science Laboratory mass cam had, you know, that maybe we'd find something similar. Excuse me, something similar.
I have another email for the two of you, or whichever one of you wants to answer it. It's from Ben in Boulder, Colorado. And he says, gentlemen, if we assume for a minute that Musk and SpaceX really will have a successful huge spacecraft and really will, within a very short period of time, put humans on Mars, that means they have obviously gotten through some sort of planetary protection review and they've been issued a launch license. In return for getting through that process, do you believe that SpaceX would be free to tell us what they find? Like, for example, could we rely on perhaps a geologist or scientist on one of those early SpaceX Mars missions to tell us if there are microbes on Mars? Or would they be told, you can't do any of this and announce it, otherwise you won't get your license? How do you see this unfolding? Because maybe for the first time we'll have private sector people not really beholding to the government, or are they beholding to the government?
I think the whole prospect of sending a spacecraft filled with people to Mars for the first time without investigating what the labeled release experiment found in 1976 is akin to a suicide mission. Okay, I mean, if there is something on Mars, it has adapted to conditions far beyond those of even the harshest on Earth, especially in terms of radiation. So, you know, what are you going to tell the public at large when you have a spacecraft touchdown? The crew members all get sick and ill, probably die, and then you've also irreversibly contaminated Mars with human microbes, because there's about 10 billion microbes per person.
Per person, yeah. But they'd be in spacesuits. They wouldn't be necessarily on the surface. They'd be inside the spacecraft, right, or some kind of underground habitat that they talk about. I mean, that seems to be their plan.
Yeah. Well, what happened with the Apollo astronauts when they went outside with their spacesuits? All the dust got wedged in every nook and cranny on that spacesuit. So they would definitely be bringing it inside eventually.
Well, you don't think new technology would go a long ways here?
No, I can't see any other way other than to maybe get a Mars sample return project, bring it back to like an orbital space station around the moon, like the deep space getaway, or gateway, getaway.
It may be a getaway, yeah.
Sorry, but I would like to do that getaway. That'd be very interesting, orbiting the moon. But, you know, it's a very serious thing to do, is to look at another organism that is still alive on another planet. I mean, you don't want to do it here.
Well, Musk isn't talking about playing by those rules.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to get a launch license either.
Gil, do you have any thoughts on Ben's question and what Barry has said?
Well, it seems to me that the first mission is only going to take some qualified astronauts. And as was Columbus and Magellan, they're expendable. They're taking
that's right.
They know about. But the difference becomes if you take ordinary passengers as tourists or what have you, the obligation there is very different. You're obligated for their safe return. So how you get from one point to the other is very difficult in the absence of knowledge about what does exist on Mars.
Well, given that that there doesn't seem to be any rush to announce possible microbes on Mars, and then if, in fact, one needs a sample return mission first or to find out what really is there, it doesn't sound like there's going to be any human spaceflight to Mars, regardless of NASA timelines or SpaceX timelines or SpaceX rocket development.
Well, the timeline I've heard is, 2035.
Right. Uh-huh.
I agree with that. As I've said before, when an experiment is made and achieves an interesting result, science demands that you repeat that experiment. And if you get the same result, excuse me, confirming it, you move ahead and expand that technology to learn more. Well, if you stop for a moment and consider what happened with Viking, we've already done all that. Viking consisted of two spacecraft. They landed 4,000 miles apart. Viking 1 got a positive response, and it confirmed that response. It ran the experiment again, so it did repeat it. And furthermore, it executed some very strict controls, all of which came down on the side of biology. So we had an experiment, if you will, that was repeated. And the fact that the time lapse was very short doesn't matter. It was repeated. Take Viking 2, and you have not only the same thing where the experiment was successfully repeated, but you have shown additional information from its controls. You found that the microorganisms die when held at very low temperature, at 10 or 20 degrees even. So you've duplicated the experiment, and you've replicated the mission. So in normal science, except for the time frame, that would be proof enough. Now, they say, oh, no, because the TCMS did not detect any organics. And I tell you again, forgetting the time, organics have been detected, plenty of organics on Mars. So all of the pre-mission criteria were met, duplicated, and replicated. And it's my contention that an independent body reviewing the data objectively would conclude, as Pat and I have, that the labeled release experiment detected living microorganisms in the topsoil of Mars.
Yep, and you got to mention that Curiosity has found organics in the soil, in the atmosphere, and in rocks. And they've even found long-chain fatty acids that are, in all of the cells on Earth. And they've also said that they've found kerogens as well.
That's true. They said they found kerogen, and not knowing that kerogen only comes from living organisms.
You guys have a phone call. Let's see who's calling you. Hi, caller. Welcome to the space show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
This is Marshall.
Okay.
I have an interesting point that's kind of been talked around but not directly stated, and that is, do you expect there to be a lot of different species of plants and animals on Mars, or are you talking about, I think it's the Yellowstone geysers that have blue-green algae, and every geyser has kind of like a single unique species that's unique to just it. In other words, how much variation do you expect?
I'll let you take that, Gil.
Okay, I would expect considerable variation. As a matter of fact, I believe that Mars and the Earth consist of one biosphere. They've been exchanging microorganisms for the billions of years that life has existed on either one, and it's very likely that the species that exist on each of them, to a large extent, duplicate each other, except under their peculiar environmental conditions, they probably mutated somewhat. Still recognizable, but somewhat different, and that difference could be dangerous to man. But I just think the environment of Mars is not that different from the environment of Earth. They keep talking about how difficult it is, but we now know there are microorganisms, many different species, extremophiles, on Earth that live under the conditions on Mars and even under worse conditions than Viking 1 and Viking 2 have landed at. So I think there's probably a number of species. Many on Earth probably cannot grow on Mars, but many can, and vice versa.
Microbial.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, there's I've been reading quite a bit about water on Mars, and basically any place you go on Mars, there should be subterranean water, you know, down someplace. Is there a lot of different species that literally would be anywhere from an inch to half a mile down that could live quite easily on Mars?
Sure.
This March, the ExoMars is supposed to launch. I am a co-investigator on an experiment on that, which is attempting to demonstrate that diurnally, that every morning, little ponds of liquid water appear on the surface of Mars. Curiosity has analyzed the moisture content of the soil it has examined and found, quote, several percent of moisture in it. Now, we detected microorganisms in the desert soil of Death Valley, and an analysis by JPL showed only 0.9% of moisture in it. So the Martian soil has more moisture than that of Death Valley.
Well, I don't think there's too much to worry about walking around on Death Valley. I don't think too many people picked up a bad microbe there, but that's a good point.
Yeah, the difference is on Mars you have a lot of subsurface ice. And in fact, one of the instruments on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter detected ice, water ice, about maybe 3 or 4 centimeters at the Viking 2 landing site. They said had the scoop, the robotic arm on Viking gone down another 2 or 3 centimeters, they would have hit the ice. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. And also I have seen images from Curiosity driving over areas that have the soil adhering to the wheels. This was around somewhere around Sol 532 or so. And, you know, I talked to a couple of NASA people about this, and they said that it looked like clay sticking to the wheels. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So what's
you
happening?
Don't need water for that, right?
You know, Mars is still an ice world, and it has a lot of ice under the soil. We don't even know how much it contain, and that ice, when it starts to come up through the soil, like that can easily dampen the soil for a while, certainly enough for microorganisms to get their daily fix of water.
Oh, yes.
And also the soil temperature range is, 200 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that? So, it's kind of like there's a point in there.
200 degrees Fahrenheit, did you say? No, that's not that warm. No, no. What it is they've measured temperature, if you want to put it in terms of Fahrenheit. Soil at the surface of Mars, you know, in the summertime can get up to about 90 degrees Fahrenheit at the soil level. But yet, if you're standing in the soil, say you could, your knees would be freezing.
Yes. Now, I was talking about the range between night and day. You can get a huge variation there. So there would be frozen. You could have short periods of time where you have liquid, and then it goes to frozen and then back to liquid and frozen on a daily basis, which some plants should be able to tolerate.
By plants, what do you mean?
Plants or animals, but microbes could tolerate it.
Yeah, well, if you've looked at any of those old Viking photographs that were taken from Viking 2 in the wintertime, you can see there's a water frost all over the surface of the rocks.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it was there for 200 days on Mars, this ice, so water ice, all over the surface of the rocks, making them
NASA
look.
NASA did not publish that image for 7 years.
Yeah, well, there were a couple of papers written about it, and I got them.
Guys, I saw a news release about 2 weeks ago, and I meant to clip it for this show, but it talked about recently declassified, previously unknown Viking pictures of surface locations on Mars, including Cydonia, that were shocking, and they had been classified, and now they're being declassified. Do you know anything about Viking pictures taken of the surface of Mars and being secretly stashed away, and what they show?
The very first color picture that came down was immediately changed because it looked like Arizona. And they immediately came back with an image that was all red.
Yeah, but David is talking about Cydonia, the face on Mars.
Well, that was part of it, but the press release mentioned a bunch of locations that Viking had taken pictures of that were immediately classified, and they are recently being declassified, and they're saying this is validating some of what was termed early Mars conspiracy stuff by conspiracy people back in the 70s, and when Viking went to Mars, now that these pictures are being classified. And I remember mentioning it on the space show, and people weren't even aware of Viking taking pictures.
Mm. You know, that's a very interesting commentary on the question raised by an earlier listener about how could the government keep a secret so long. Well, apparently they kept those secrets that long.
Well, I don't know. Something stinks.
Well, from my experience, the way you get something really classified is you put it in a drawer and don't tell anybody about it.
Or you don't look for life. If you don't want to find life, don't look for it.
Yeah, well, that's what it boils down to. That was interesting, but we don't like it. We'll shelve it someplace and nobody sees it, so nobody says anything.
Well, if I can find the news article after the show ends, I will put it in the archive summary of the show. In the meantime, if any listeners know what I'm talking about and can possibly find it, I would appreciate your sending it to me or posting it yourself on the blog, because I know I'm not dreaming, and I didn't know there were secret pictures taken by Viking of the surface of Mars, and of course, we wouldn't know if they're secret, right? I mean, they were classified. So,
yeah, when you say Viking, David, you mean the Viking orbiters, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because the landers were stationary. They couldn't move around.
Well, at first I thought it was from the Viking orbiters in the mission before they landed. So I can't tell you – I can't clarify that because I don't remember, and I don't have the information at hand to clarify it.
The first color picture was from the lander.
But it was already down, right?
Yes, yes, it was down. It took a good...
Yeah, but it didn't land in Cydonia.
And it was immediately changed.
So I thought the press release was from orbit, not from pictures taken on the surface, but I could be wrong. So again, if somebody out there knows the press release that I saw, it's about 2 weeks to a month ago that this came across. I did not save it, and I meant to have it for this particular program, and I dropped the ball on it, and I'm sorry because I wanted to ask you specifically about it and tell you what it said, which would be more accurate than what I'm trying to remember.
Maybe you can Google it.
Well, I tried to just now, but I'm not getting it. And it says images for Viking classified photos of Mars, but all I'm getting are like hundreds of different pictures that don't have any relevance to any, you know how Google does that kind of stuff. But I'm not getting the news articles about it. So I don't know. And I'm also getting Minnesota Vikings football team crap. So, so
Minnesota Vikings, they're not playing today.
I do know that. So, listeners, if any of you can help find that news release that I got a couple of weeks ago, we'd love to have it up on the blog or send it to me, and I'll put it there. Gil, Viking is still got life to it. You know, how many decades are we? 5 decades down the road, and but so it doesn't die, but we don't get it. I'm going to say resolved, or we don't come to any conclusions about it. I don't get that. It's got a life of its own, and yet we can't come to a resolution.
The reason it has a life of its own is not only because of its strong data, and no one has ever questioned the data or the instrument. They've both operated perfectly all the time they were tested on Earth. Very good legacy.
But, Gil, NASA is saying that they've measured some oxygen coming out of the soil. With Curiosity. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard
that.
Gail, you've heard that?
There are so many simple things they could do. Why don't they take a look at the CO2 in the atmosphere, which I contend they have to excuse in some way. It all should long ago have been turned into CO by the ultraviolet light. But why don't they look in local regions and look at the isotopic composition of the CO2 to see whether it is largely C12 or C13, what the ratio is, because, as you know, life is partial to one isomer.
That's right.
I have another question from you from a listener. Adrian is in San Diego. If the guests propose that there are photosynthetic organisms on Mars, they obviously would have to be an oxygenic photosynthesizer, as there is no appreciable oxygen in the Mars atmosphere. If these exist, why do they think that such a contrary evolutionary pathway occurred on Mars, while on Earth photosynthesis evolved primarily to produce oxygen and thus our current atmosphere?
Go ahead, Gil.
CO2 is essential on Earth, and what is it, 0.03%? So I think, as you say, they've detected some oxygen. They did in the beginning. There's a very minor component of oxygen in the atmosphere. Might be enough.
Well, manganese oxides, which they have detected on Mars, require a certain amount of oxygen to produce it. So, they were thinking about that question for a while, because basically manganese oxides are like rock varnish that you find here on Earth.
Uh-huh.
And I've done a lot of work with manganese oxides and rock varnish, and from all the work we have done on it, we found that bacteria can easily oxidize. You know, so it doesn't have to be aerobic. It can be anoxic, and you got oxygen coming up through the soil, probably from the decomposition of water. Water molecules breaking apart in liquid water ice.
So you're saying that the path could be different, even though there's similarities with Earth.
Yeah.
We're still trying to figure out Earth.
The other reason the Viking LR won't go away is because in all these, 43, 44 years, no one has been able to come up with an alternate explanation other than biology. All the chemical explanations, the experiments, the theories have all gone away because they've all been shown, every one of them, to be inconsistent with science. And if you have no other answer, as Sherlock Holmes said, or as Einstein said, you got to accept it.
You have another caller, gentlemen. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John. Welcome back to the show.
I was wondering, with this, you're all convinced then if there are bacteria there, that these would be very dangerous to human life?
Could be.
Could be, yeah, because we don't know. I've often wondered about, the idea of an alien life form, like the bacteria or whatever, is how they would meet another evolutionary life form, how they would tend to interact. Maybe our own bodies would be hostile to these bacteria in such a way that they would just not be able to survive there, because of some chemical issues that would be just different than what they're used to. Is that?
I never said that I was convinced that they were pathogenic. I say it could be.
Could be. So the best way would be to study it somewhere off of Earth.
Yeah, well, microorganisms, basically their purpose is to seek out food. Mm-hmm. And if they share a few of the same amino acids, or some carbon compounds, it might make us attractive to them as a food source. And it's not just human beings. We're talking about the whole biosphere here. So,
Well, when this came up with Dr. Zubrin on Hotel Mars in his op-ed, with the comments and articles written by Professor Simon, Bob, if you're familiar with how he is, he was on the warpath, man. You know, this is all designed to prevent humans from going to Mars. And, there is nothing that's going to eat our oceans, and this is BS. And he articulated his case in 10 minutes with Mr. Batchelor. People can go hear it. It's from 2 weeks ago. And he will be back on the show on the 11th because he's written a longer policy statement that he's coming on to discuss. So he holds a completely opposite view from what the two of you are expressing, and he doesn't even think there's any risk at all, and this is not even a plausibility.
I'm familiar with some of Dr. Zubrin's theories, like his Canada geese theory.
Yeah, he used that in Hotel Mars, by the way, too. He used that example in Hotel Mars.
Yeah, well, maybe you ought to have another guest on when he's on again, and that's Dr. John Rummel, former Planetary Protection Officer for NASA.
Yeah, John has been on the show before. I know who he is.
Yeah, but that would be a good conversation.
It's hard to get people to do that with one another. You'd be surprised how hard it is to like put one person with one set of views and another with 180 degrees opposite and have them kind of debate it out. That's really challenging to arrange, I have to tell you. Not very many people want to do that. They're really fine expressing their views when they have the microphone, but debating it is much harder, especially on live radio. Sometimes at conferences, when you have a panel on, say, planetary protection in Mars, and you'd have Zubrin and you'd have John Rummel and maybe some other people, it's easier to put them all together than it is on a one-on-one radio kind of interview.
On a comical level, with Gil here, I do believe Dr. Horowitz gave you a simple solution, Gil, at one point, right? Didn't he tell you that he would gladly eat Mars soil to prove you wrong?
Now, which Dr. Horowitz are we talking about?
Norman Horowitz.
Okay.
He was the...
yes, he did. He said he'd be glad to eat it.
Pyrolytic release experiment. But he told Gil that he was so infuriated that Gil kept insisting that his data were correct for the discovery of microorganisms that he says, I'm sure that you are wrong, and I would gladly eat Mars soil to prove you wrong. So, you know what I say to that is bon appetit.
It didn't happen. Of course, there's no soil for him to eat, so that's a safe statement to make.
Yeah, but that's basically what you're going to have to do to get this settled. I mean, it's not going to be an opinion war like Dr. Zubrin would like to do. It's not an opinion war. It's about scientific data. It's about going there, you know, looking at any situation where life isn't involved. And it could be a long process, too. You
know, well, let me do it this way. Since Bob is going to be on February 11th, why don't each of you give me a question to ask him, and I'll say this is from Gil, this is from Barry, and see what he answers.
Well, it sounds reasonable.
You can email
if I'm around that particular day.
Well, or just email it to me in advance of the show.
My question would be, what will you say after the Chinese announced the discovery of life on Mars?
Well, he would be pissed off because he thinks we should be announcing life discovery on Mars. So
the Chinese are going to do it.
Yeah, but Zubrin is all for getting to Mars and doing this. He doesn't want us to not do it. He just thinks, I'm just talking about the planetary protection side, he thinks that's overkill. And as you said, he uses the Canadian geese and the Border Patrol as an example.
Tell that to the people in China today.
Yeah, well, you know, there's been, I mean, it's a huge subject to talk about planetary protection. I mean, they discovered on trips to the International Space Station and on the space shuttle that once you take microorganisms into space, they start to mutate. And, you know, I mean, this is radiation, and we're talking about radiation, you know, that's still in a protective zone in the Earth's magnetic field. God knows what will happen to astronauts on their six-month journey out to Mars with cosmic radiation, you know, coming through the spacecraft. I mean, what's the suggestion here? Line the spacecraft in lead?
Maybe a aluminum foil, like people do on mountains when they go meditate. John, you're still on the phone. Do you have any more to say? Do you want to keep contributing?
Well, earlier it was referenced the idea of interchange of life between the Earth and Mars, I guess particularly meteorites coming from Mars. So maybe we've already experienced some of this Martian life here. Is that kind of what's being argued there?
Well, there's been at least 5 major mass extinctions in the Earth. I don't know. And many, many smaller ones. So we don't know about that. I mean, it's a big subject. Panspermia.
So maybe that has occurred. It looks like that really perhaps we ought to reorient our study then toward some kind of safe way to evaluate this with a robot return to, like you say, someplace other than Earth, maybe moon orbit,
yeah,
whatever. And then have a lab there and do experiments or something.
Sending people to Mars, like right now, right off the bat, a bunch of people get off on Mars. I mean, I've seen those episodes, like on the Twilight Zone and stuff, and they never end very well.
Yeah, but that's science fiction. You don't think SpaceX and others that develop the capability to go to Mars aren't going to do it better or safely?
Well, already you're telling me that they're not going to include any planetary planetary protection measures. So.
Well, no. Well, first of all, I'm not planning the mission. I don't know what they will include, and I don't know what the conditions of a launch license will require. So they may very well, have constraints placed upon them, including Mr. Musk. I just know that Zubrin is not a strong supporter of planetary protection.
That's what I can say.
Oh, he wants to go. He wants to go on a tin can.
Yeah, well, he could be the first.
Well, and Mr. Musk wants to go.
Yeah, well, yeah. Tell you what, until the analysis is done, it would be detrimental not only to them, but also to Mars, the contamination from the human body itself, even though decomposing on the surface, would probably affect the entire biosphere in less than 100 years.
And while Mars One went bankrupt and was never seriously considered by anyone that I know of, they had hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people around the world, try to sign up to go on their one-way mission. So there's no shortage of people that would make this mission, that would take the flight.
Well, we could have used them in World War II.
Maybe these are the descendants of people from where I don't know. But John, do you have anything else? I'll see if somebody else wants to line in our remaining minutes.
Could a robotic laboratory around the could that be done robotically to do the basic at least initial analysis?
They're talking about it right now. It's called the
Mars Base Camp, right?
No, it's the Deep Space Gateway. It's called.
But I mean, we might want to have some sort of before. I mean, things like this is something to be more affordable to do than an actual human Mars mission. Would be to go ahead and do some sort of robotic mission to analyze life on Mars if it exists, and like you're saying, it does, and have some analysis about subjecting it to human organisms—not human, but I mean Earth organisms—and see what happens, rats or whatever, and. If it kills them off immediately, you'd probably go, okay, we're not going to go there.
That's right. And any microbiologist that would volunteer for such a mission is going to have to consider himself expendable because it would be a very dangerous mission. Even in lunar orbit, you know, you had a special containment facility where this is done, you know. I mean, because once it's out, you know, You can't return the guys to Earth screaming, you know, get me to a hospital.
You know, I'm sorry that I'm not getting emails or hearing from the people who more or less would be concurring with Dr. Zubrin and being very critical of what the three of you are saying about precaution, safety, you know, doing analysis and all of that, because a sizable number of people don't believe that Andromeda strain is real, that this is a threat, and nothing should constrain us. We should be able to go to Mars. And I'd like to hear from them so the two of you could respond to them, but where are they? Maybe they're getting ready for the Super Bowl. I don't know.
Probably.
I actually did get an email from James Davis, Jim Davis, who wanted me to ask you, Gil, and you, Barry, what you thought of doing the space show on Super Bowl Sunday. I originally wasn't going to ask it, but he posted it on the blog, so it's there for everyone to see, plus my sarcastic reply. Wonder what his thoughts would be on the safety and the precautions that you guys are advocating. John, are you through? Can I clear the line?
I'm through. Yeah, okay. Very interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Take care, John.
Listeners, we still have time if you want to get a quick call in, and I'd love to hear from you if you think planetary protection sucks. This is a time to call and talk to Barry and Gil. 1-866-687-7223. Gil, do you see any... As General Westmoreland used to say, light at the end of the tunnel, meaning an end to this Viking contradiction, this Viking controversy. Is it going to end soon, and how?
Well, the only way I can see it ending within the next decade or two is to have this objective panel meeting that I keep calling for,
I'd like to have some major institution convene a panel of experts and hopefully do it while Pat and I are still alive so we can give our testimony, have them analyze the data and write a report. I'm convinced they'd write a report saying we had detected life.
Gil, you've been advocating this since the first time I met you on the space show,
yep,
maybe 7 years ago, and I haven't seen any traction on this whatsoever. So it's clear to me that the policymakers, the powers to be, are not headed in that direction.
Well, the real reason would certainly include, if not consist of entirely, people on that panel coming down with a verdict against the NASA position are not likely to be funded for space science.
Well, it'd have to be independent of national space agencies. But
well, how could it be? Because those people who are qualified to participate are undoubtedly on grants from NASA.
So you're suggesting the retribution to be truly objective, if you came down on a side different from NASA, would be too critical to careers.
I think that's why no institution has taken this obvious thing on.
Well, then,
I mean, nobody's ever examined the data since 1977 when the National Science Foundation did.
Especially with the new data from Curiosity showing
organics. Especially with the new data, right. Why doesn't some organization, a Harvard, a Carnegie Institute, Stanford, set up such a panel? It's a major question for everyone.
I can't answer that. So you don't see an end to this controversy because the way to end it is realistically not going to happen.
Well, as I said, not jokingly, Chinese are going to go there and detect life. They'll announce it.
When is that mission scheduled, Gil?
Well, China has a Mars mission later this year. ESA has one.
Yeah.
The U.S. has one. Yeah. Abu Dhabi has one.
Yeah.
Are any of these looking for life? Do you know if any of these missions could do this?
I'll bet you the Chinese one is.
Hopefully it's not another InSight mission to detect tremors on Mars.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that's spending a lot of money not a whole lot.
Microorganisms don't make major tremors.
No. But, you know, what we need is we don't need believing. What we need is data. Believing is one thing, you know, but the data, the best data we have so far is the LR data, okay? That is not only great data.
No, there's excellent data.
Yeah, it's great data, but it's also a warning. It's a warning that something is there. And that if you don't find out what it is in the right way.
Wait a minute, one at a time. What, Gil?
Stromatolites have been found on Mars. They are only made by microorganisms.
Well, who says that, Gil? Who found the stromatolites?
They were found by Fran Nofka, and also they were analyzed statistically by Bianchiardi of Italy, and he found the possibility that the stromatolite images on Earth match the ones found on Mars so closely was a P of less than 0.004.
Well, Mr. Bianchiardi is going to love my new book that comes out then.
Excuse me?
I have a new book coming out. It'll be released probably by the end of the week.
Well, tell us about your book real quick, Barry.
I'm not going to.
Oh, why not?
Because it's going to be a shock, I think. So I'll keep the title and the book secret until it's released.
Well, how will we know? Will you tell us when it's released?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
All right.
As soon as
I just don't want any issues with copyright or anything like that. You know, if I say it before it's released, you know how people are. Well, I'm going to write that book right now.
Well, let the space show know, and we can talk about it.
Absolutely. Yep. You're on my list of top 10 people to contact.
Should we have any? I mean, I promised you guys an hour, and we're approaching 90 minutes. What else should we have talked about, or what else would you both like us to say? You got a possible experiment; it gets killed. Viking continues to be controversial. There seems to be evidence supportive, but you can't get anything conclusive. And we don't do real life searches when we send missions to Mars. So where are we? I don't know where we are, other than frustration plus.
Well, we are at the launch this July of Mars 2020.
Right.
Part of the mission of Mars 2020, as you must know, is to retrieve the first soil and rock samples and cache them for another mission that will come there and pick them up and return them, as far as I know, to Earth. I'm hoping that they're going to go with the Deep Space Gateway concept in an orbital laboratory around the moon. That'd be the best and safest way to do it, but, you know, this is
wait,
the
wait,
job for...
You yeah. know, the bipartisan House committee canceled that last week.
What, the Deep Space Gateway?
Yes, they did, and they canceled the Artemis program, and they also said any lunar landers that are going to be developed eventually down the road for 2028 or later will be government lunar landers, not private sector. There'll be no 2024 lunar landing, and the only reason to go to the moon is to be a gateway for Mars. And our focus needs to be on humans to Mars, and possibly we'll move the gateway so that it's a Martian gateway and not a lunar gateway, as we won't need it as a lunar gateway. So the whole House has not voted on this yet because they've been busy with whatever these guys want to do over there. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should send the House to Mars. That'd be a good experiment to see how those critters survive in that environment. But this would have to be obviously approved by the entire House. Then it would have to be signed off on by the Senate, and
but also the ESA.
And well, I don't. Not for American law. They could trash the international partners. That seems to be what they're doing. The commentary when Marcia Smith broke the news on Space Policy Online. People were furious, and of course they were talking about this is a Boeing-only program now for SLS and da-da-da-da-da. You can have your own opinion about all of that, but you can read all about these releases because Marcia's been doing an incredible job of detailing the policy at spacepolicyonline.com. And so if this were to become law, meaning the whole House would have to approve it, the Senate would have to approve it, and the President would have to put it into law, then you would not have a lunar gateway or a 2024 lunar landing or Artemis.
Is this all tied in with the Space Force?
No, not to my knowledge, doesn't have anything to do with Space Force. It's totally separate. Adrian sent the two of you another note. By the way, he is a PhD scientist, so just a little way of his background. He's in San Diego. A simple solution to the test of life with a C-14 label release experiment would be to independently test the label release in separate experimental chambers with one dextro amino acid and the other with levoform amino acids. A differential release from either would strongly suggest biological activity.
What do you think, Gil?
We have proposed that to NASA many times, formally, in writing, and verbally a dozen times. They won't even listen.
So is this NASA under the current administration, or is this previous NASA's, or would it make any difference?
I've written it in great detail to the head of the Science and Technology Committee of the House. Never got a response.
You have another email real quick. Ken is in Tucson, and he says, on previous shows, Gil, David has asked you if you've ever reached out to or had an opportunity to talk to or exchange information with SpaceX or Mr. Musk. Has that ever happened yet?
No, it has not. I just don't have an in there.
You couldn't just send Musk an email on your own and he wouldn't know who you were?
No, I get no response.
You don't think you'd get a response?
No.
I don't know. You're well-known enough and respected.
Remember the last time you asked if anyone had an in to convey it to me as a contact so I might try? I never heard from anyone.
Well, I'm sure there are listeners that that are in touch with and have contact with SpaceX or high-up people. So I'm surprised that they haven't reached out to you.
No.
Well, listeners,
I've also written to Pence about it.
Listeners, that option is still there. If you want to get a hold of Gil and introduce him to some of your contacts at SpaceX, you can let me know, and I'll put you directly in contact with Gil, or you can do it through me, and I'll relay your emails and your information to Gil, and that would be really great if any of you want to reach out and do that. He says you could probably reach, this is from Matt in Germany, and he says you might be able to reach Musk by Twitter. But you probably, do you do Twitter, Gil?
No.
Barry, do you?
I do not.
Okay. Does Pat do Twitter?
I don't think so.
Thanks anyway, Matt, but not everybody.
Yep, thanks, Matt.
Not everybody does Twitter.
Maybe Matt could do it for us.
Well, Matt, if you, I don't know, I know he does Twitter. So, is there anything we should have covered that we haven't covered today, or anything that either of you want to tell us to look for going forward?
I think. Some eyebrows are going to be raised when the book comes out. My book, that is.
Right.
Okay, I think it's going to describe and paint a picture of why NASA has been avoiding the life issue. Okay, so that's just a tidbit there for you.
Gil, any summary comments, anything we should have talked with you about or have omitted or anything like that?
I think we've covered it pretty well. And I hope Barry's book is going to be the sensation he indicates it might be.
Well,
I think there's, yes.
Since it's incognito, we'll have to wait to hear from Barry with some news about it. So I'm totally dependent on you for that information, Barry.
I can only say I hope it's as good as his first book, because that book, Mars, the Living Planet, remains an outstanding, excellent source. I have read it many times, and even in today's advanced knowledge, there's nothing in it that has to be retracted or corrected. He did a splendid job.
Thank you, Gil.
I have one final question that's come in. Beverly is in Portland, Oregon, and she says, Gil and Barry, amateur astronomy and the tools available that are affordable and advanced for amateurs to use have really gone forward. Is there anything amateurs can do today with advanced technology at their fingertips that could help satisfy or settle the labeled release experiment analysis?
That's a very good question. Because amateur astronomy, if you still want to call it that, I mean, I've seen amateur images of Mars done with different technology
that's available today that rivals the Hubble Space Telescope. So, you know, guys with like a 12-inch or 16-inch telescope can now take images of Mars that look just as spectacular as the Hubble images. And you can go online and look at some of this stuff, and it's incredible, you know. So I do think that there is a way for amateurs to, you know, get involved, to look for, like, gases in the atmosphere, you know, things that are happening, maybe soil changes. You know, I just had a question from a young lady not too long ago about the old wave of darkening. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I used to take my telescope out. I have about five of them now. So, but one time I had this 12.5-inch reflector that I used to use consistently. And every time Mars spring came around and summer, you know, the North Polar ice cap would be sublimating and the soil would be getting darker. And, you know, we're all told that it's dust that does that right now. And I'm not sure if that's correct because, you know, there was a lot of occasions that I looked at that happening and the atmosphere was absolutely clearer. You could, there was no dust around, blowing around. So, you know, maybe there is something to the wave of darkening, like in terms of, you know, ice under the soil, moistening the upper limits as it's sublimating. So I think there's something there, you know. Everybody I've talked to thought that's a crazy idea. They would know if the wave of darkening is something other than just sand or dust blowing around. And I'm not sure if they do or not. What do you think, Gil? Any comment on the wave of darkening?
Well, as you say, they've blitzed it so many times, and no one is willing to give it a fair opportunity, saying, you know, we don't know. Well, the truth is, we don't know.
It'd be really interesting to do a project with time-lapse photography over a period of time of the wave of darkening with a good amateur telescope. And, you know, there's different astronomy stacking programs. And
hey, guys, I got a call coming in.
You got to go. Okay.
Can I leave? And did you?
Gil, enjoy the football game.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Gil.
Go San Francisco.
Thank you. Barry, any concluding comments for you?
No, I'll be in touch with you when the book comes out, and I want to thank you for being the kind host that you are. Your show is always really good.
Well, thank you. I will get it archived and get the information off to Gil and the two of you, and we'll talk again, I'm sure, since the controversy is not going to go away. So
who are you with, Kansas City or?
Oh, I'm not really. I'm much more into college football, especially with Oklahoma that continues to disappoint the hell out of me. But I guess since I live in the Bay Area, probably the 49ers would be my choice. But I'm much more of a college football fan than I am a pro fan.
I see. Well, that's all right.
So that's why I said I'm for Oklahoma, but they blow it all the time, so what the hell can I say? It's kind of, controversies surround lots of things. Barry, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to
hearing
about your book in the very near future.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you again soon, because as I said, this is not going away. And everybody, read the WAPO article I put on the blog. Today really is a very, very rare day on the calendar, and we had a great show on this day to help everybody remember it.
Yeah, thanks for telling us.
Thanks to Gil, and thanks to Barry, and all of you who called, and all of you who sent in emails. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend. Keep looking up, stay safe, and have a good week coming up. Goodbye from the Space Show.
Bye-bye.